I'm Dima Roberts, Stage and Studio. We're listening to music from Portland composer and musician David Ornette Cherry. You can hear his music at davidornettecherry.com. The Fertile Ground Festival coverage continues today. This time we'll talk about three original plays that star African-American actresses. Portland's largest performing arts festival returns, the Fertile Ground Festival, for its eighth season, Thursday, January 21st through Sunday, January 31st. We'll talk with three playwrights about their three original shows debuting at the festival, so stay tuned. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dima Roberts. With me in the studio are S. Renee Mitchell. Hello, Renee.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Nancy Moss, hello.
Hi, Dima.
And Bonnie Ratner, welcome.
Thank you, Dima.
Bonnie and Nancy are kind of newcomers here, so welcome. But welcome all. You've been here a lot, Renee. Welcome all to Stage and Studio. Now, you three are single-handedly raising the visibility of African-American women in Portland theater right now, at least this month, especially. Yeah, which is great. You know, it's great. And I thought you would all have something in common, and you actually do. You're actually sharing some actresses, too, as well as themes, as well as themes. So let's start off with S. Renee Mitchell's new play, Ophelia in Oblivion. It's her personal tale of surviving family drama. And today we're also featuring Bonnie Ratner's Hazardous Beauty, about two writing partners in a memoir class, and Nancy Moss with her play, Deception, about a biracial young woman passing for white in 1880s Portland. So all three plays are part of the Fertile Ground Festival 2016. And during this conversation, I recommend listeners to follow along by visiting the website for Fertile Ground, and that's fertilegroundpdx.org. You can also visit stageandstudio.org for the link to the Fertile Ground site. First off, Renee, let's hear about your play, Ophelia in Oblivion. It began as an assignment for a 10-minute playwriting class, and then you developed it into a full-length work, which sometimes happens, not always, but sometimes. So tell us about that journey.
Well, I didn't even expect to write a play when I joined this class at Portland Center Stage. But that once we showed up, we were told that was our assignment. And so I'd also like to clarify, this is not actually my story. This is just it's a piece of fiction.
Okay.
And playwriting. And so I had been thinking about some things as artists and creatives, put some things in the back of my mind about, I would love to write about this at some point. And so I just came up with the 10 minutes and I started thinking about it. And I also shared it with some people. And I said, I really would love to expand the story to make it so much more comprehensive, as well as add some of the layers of complexity that I addressed in the play, and just kept working with it and working with it. And one of my playwriting mentors is Rich Rubin, who I was in his play at the last Fertile Ground Festival, Cottonwood in the Flood. And so he was very, very helpful about giving me some insights, and he actually helped me change the name of it. It was something different when it was a 10-minute play. And Ophelia was always the name of my main character, so he suggested Ophelia in Oblivion, and it fit perfectly.
Mm-hmm. What was the title before?
Sacrificing Justice.
Oh, I like this new title.
Oh, okay. Because some people might misunderstand about what the play is about with Sacrificing Justice. Justice
exactly.
is actually the name of the daughter.
Oh.
Yes.
It's a good title, but I think Ophelia in Oblivion makes you wonder.
Yes,
makes you wonder.
And it also kind of hints at some of the Shakespearean elements that are in the play that I think people would really enjoy.
Had you written a play before?
Yes, I have written actually a couple plays, and I had not actually presented a play in Portland until 2005. It was my own personal tale about domestic violence.
I thought you had a couple of times.
And it was a story that included a play that included music and singing and that kind of thing. So I had done Tangoing with Tornadoes for a couple of years, and I've written other plays, but never really performed them. There was one year I wrote a play about Kwanzaa that Passon Art Theater Company produced at the library a couple years ago. So I've just decided I'm going to start putting more of my words out there. And I was so inspired by participating in Fertile Ground that I said, this is the year.
This is the year.
This is the year
it.
Where
you're
I produce
it.
Something.
Well, now you said it's not a personal piece, but some, not kind of any kind of personal experience out of this?
Well, beyond the fact that this, I think, resonates with a lot of people who
sure.
have mothers and who have daughters. And so sometimes it can be a little complicated with the relationship between a mother and daughter. And so in that way, yes, it certainly resonates with me as it does with many, many other people. But there's so many other things that it addresses.
Right.
Multi-generational secrets and regret and hate and love and sex and other, you know, things that we encounter in life and kind of all pull it together to try to tell a tale of the power of forgiveness and also karma sometimes is an issue, even though we'd like to sometimes forget some of the things that we do. It always kind of comes back.
It comes back. Well, now there are three women in the play.
There are three
women. Characters. And actually, two of the actresses are in one. Damaris
yes.
Webb is in Deception, and Skeeter Green is also in Hazardous Beauty. So you
yes.
kind of you have a lot in common here as far
we
as
do.
Cast members, especially.
Absolutely.
So some of the themes you talk about, I mean, are they three sisters or are they mother and two sisters? Or
well,
what,
I'm
who are
not going to let the cat out. Of the bag.
Oh, that's
but
a cat.
There,
all
there's,
right. there's a cat
there's,
in there.
There's a cat.
Okay.
There's definitely a mother-daughter relationship, but I would say that all three of them have some mysterious connection that
okay.
will be unveiled as people are listening to.
Is
the
there
script.
A setting?
There is. It's a bedroom. It could be in any
so
urban city.
So it's a contemporary
city.
Play.
It's a contemporary play, absolutely. And it could be in any urban city. It could actually be of women of any race.
Oh, really?
And I had chosen Skeeter and Damaris because I've worked with them before. I've been in plays with them before. And they were, I knew that they were amazing, fabulous actresses. And so it was easy to make that connection and say, can you do this with me? And then Jackie is part of my program that I run called Spitwrite.
Yeah, tell us about that.
So Spitwrite is an opportunity for young people from 13 to 19 to attend writing and performance workshops and really understand how powerful that their voice can be. And we infuse youth voice into adult spaces and we pay our young people to perform because it's always, I think, very important to make room for young people in many of our activities and meetings and ways that we interact as adults. Because when we talk about the kids are our future, we can't wait until they are adults to give them opportunity to learn how to become leaders. And so we also run the Youth Poet Laureate Project. And so and we did another project called, we created a What You Want to Do performance crew in partnership with the Portland Parks and Recreation. So Jackie was in charge of my crew, my performance crew. And we've also worked together. She's a very, very experienced slam poet and hip hop artist. She's recorded albums and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it was just kind of people that
it all
were around
came
me.
Together for
yes,
you.
It sure
and
did.
And Bobby Bermea is directing too. So it's
yes,
all, yeah,
yes, yes.
It sounds like a good group of people. Now, if young people want to find out about Spitwrite, is that on your website?
Yes, spitwrite.com. Yes,
there
just
you
keep
go.
It simple. And we are accepting applications
yeah.
for our next
okay.
round of Youth Poet Laureate. So
definitely want to give a shout out for that.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something that in the process of working on this play that's kind of surprised you when you heard the words read out loud by other people? You know, I think that's a good moment for a lot of playwrights.
What did surprise me is that some of the things that I thought were obvious, as far as some of the mystery and complexity, people didn't in the play didn't necessarily get it.
Mm. Mm.
So I know that there will be some people who have questions afterward once they see it, and want to explore some of the things that came up. So I was a little surprised. I thought it was kind of clear, but it comes up with, you know, some mystery, and I think that leads to this amazing surprise ending that I'm certainly not going to give away. But
well, the stage reading of the full-length play Ophelia in Oblivion by S. Renee Mitchell premieres Friday and Saturday, January 22nd through the 23rd at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, January 24th at 2:30 p.m. All shows are at the Celebration Tabernacle. That's located at 8131 North Denver Avenue in Kenton neighborhood. And for tickets, visit boxofficetickets.com, or you can go to fertilegroundpdx.org or stageandstudio.org, where I have everything about the show you're listening to right now. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts, and I've been talking with S. Renee Mitchell, and with her is Nancy Moss and Bonnie Ratner, and there are three playwrights representing their work at Fertile Ground this year. It's an 11-day festival beginning January 21st and running to January 31st, and to find out more at fertilegroundpdx.org. Bonnie Ratner, your play Hazardous Beauty is about two women who meet in a memoir class, and they become writing partners. So is this based on an actual experience?
No.
Darn it. Come on, you guys.
This is fiction, as Renee said. Yes. This is fiction.
Yes. Oh, come on.
This is fiction, people.
So what inspired you to write this fictional play?
Wow. Well, it's a combination of things. One is the work that I've been doing for years, really, and for the last number of years in Portland as well, which is community planning and development, social justice work. And I have these ideas in my head and all these questions in my head, and they just needed to get out. They needed to be aired, and they needed to be processed. But I've been playing with this title, Hazardous Beauty, and the ideas in Hazardous Beauty for a number of years.
What does it refer to?
Yeah, and it refers to a number of things. On one level, this idea of beauty comes from a favorite line in a favorite poem of mine, which is "Death is the mother of beauty," which is from Wallace Stevens' Sunday Morning. And what does this mean? So on a very simple level, we see the leaves change in the fall. And we see the leaves change in the fall. And we see this gorgeous display of color. But we know what has happened is that the leaves are on their way to dying. And so it brings up this very profound thing for me about change and what happens in change. So I've been very engaged with this idea of beauty. And beauty, this journey to beauty, is a very hazardous one. And so on the next level, it is about this relationship between the white woman and the black woman, and very specifically that, because I am talking about difference and the hazardous journey of relationships across difference. I would also add that every relationship we have is with somebody different from us. It's just a matter of degree. So I would say that, and what we explore also is that, you know, we all come into relationships with our walls, our baggage, our assumptions, and all these things that so easily prevent this connection. So it's treacherous along the way to get there.
So tell us about these two women and how close do they get during the process of writing together?
So they're assigned as partners, and you know, they have sort of license to critique each other, but they're writing about their lives.
Right.
So what happens is they actually end up sort of critiquing each other's lives and their choices. So
and that could be hazardous.
This is hazardous. This is very hazardous. So through this process, we're going through a constant state of uncovering and revealing. And I'm not going to reveal how close or how not they get, but they're engaged all the way through, and they discover along the way what they have in common, what they don't have in common, how they can deal with that. But I would like to say that it is a feminist play in the sense that the personal is the political.
Right.
And it takes place today in a Portland College classroom. And we're on the verge in Portland. We're at the crossroads. You know, the question is in the air, is Portland going to become the progressive, inclusive city that it would like to be? And that's a question. And it's a hazardous journey.
Well, it's been a question since I've moved here. Okay. 1989. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's always going to be an important issue.
And if we make that hazardous journey to that great beauty, you know, some things are going to die along the way.
Well, now you have a talk back scheduled after
yes.
each. And so tell us about that and who, you know, what are you going to talk? What is the theme around that?
So I have two facilitators.
Right.
One is Jane Vogel, whom we all know.
Age and gender
equity in the arts. And Professor Roberta Hunt, who's a dear friend and colleague of mine. She teaches in the gender and women's studies and black studies at Portland State. And so they will be talking and facilitating from, you know, these intersections of class and gender and race and sexuality. Okay. Yeah.
Well, Hazardous Beauty, a stage reading of a new work by Bonnie Radner, premieres January 29th and 30th at 7:30 at Portland Abbey Arts.
Yes.
And that's located at 7600 North Hereford Avenue in Portland. What kind of a space is that?
Yeah, it's a lovely space. Yeah. It's the Undercroft in the Abbey, and it seats 75, 100 if we press people in.
Nice.
And it's exciting. There's an intercultural arts collective that's going on there, and they also do work with students, and it's a nice kind of new space to recognize.
It's always good to find out about new spaces.
Yeah, I thought
so too. A post-show conversation will be co-facilitated by Jane Vogel and Professor Roberta Hunt of PSU. And tickets are available online through boxofficetickets.com. And I also have a link to that at stageandstudio.org. And there's one at fertilegroundbdx.org. Now, next we turn to playwright Nancy Moss, who presents her play Deception, starring actress Damaris Webb as a single young woman in 1880s Portland who is passing for white to survive. And I'm just going to ask Nancy just tell a little bit more about it and what the, you know, what was your motivation for it?
Well, my motivation was when I read about the Oregon's racial exclusion laws, I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that a state could do it or would do it. And then I tried to think about what would it feel like if the state told you you're not good enough to live here, and to try to show it through a character. That was the challenge.
Well, Damaris is also in Ophelia and Oblivion.
Yes, I know.
And I just want to say full disclosure here, I'm directing Nancy's play, and that opens January 28th, 29th, and 7:30 p.m., and January 31st is the 2 p.m. matinee. But Nancy, perhaps Renee or Bonnie might have questions for you about the play.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really curious about the issue. And having... you know, being related to folks who have passed, and for some of those reasons that probably come up in your play. So I'm just curious about some of the research that you did to kind of dive into this issue.
Yeah, well, a lot of it has to do with the time, because the 1880s, one of the things I did was I found a list of 19th century slang, and one of the words was bodacious, and Caleb, the black half-brother, who comes and blackmails his sister. He's kind of a scamp, but you see, he grew up in slavery, and so he learned to steal. He saved his family by stealing. And so, kind of, if you can use the word ethics, the ethics, the code that slavery caused him to adapt, maybe didn't help him so much afterwards. Anyway, so he uses the word bodacious. And there was another word, codfish. If somebody was kind of cold kind of guy, they called him a codfish. And also research, maybe getting away from your central question, but there was a European investor who came and had $15 million to invest in the railroads. And so $15 million in 1880 was a humongous sum. And I had to fictionalize it because the title is Deception, and nearly all my characters are deceiving somebody, themselves, each other, and the heroine that Damaris plays is deceiving the people around her. But in a way, she's deceiving herself by thinking she could leave her black heritage, her mother, behind. It limits her. So anyway, because I was fictionalizing this European guy, I had to make him a fictional dude, because I'm giving him, he has a level of deception too. Even the hero, you know, we have what I guess you'd say a romantic hero, but he is deceiving because he comes to Anne and kind of asks her to spy on the wealthy German guy. So did I get away from your question there? I was dealing with research because I did a lot. Oh yeah, it was cool too. The hero who's wealthy because he's an entrepreneur, he buys and sells land. So I had to find out, well, in 1880, where would somebody wealthy live? So I went to the Oregon Historical Society, which is a wonderful place. You know, you can just sit down up there and they give you a little bit of pencil and a little pen right away. But anyway, I found a photograph of a really nice looking house. Okay. So that was Fifth and Yamhill. So Conrad, who is also, as I say, he's deceiving people. He lives on Fifth and Yamhill. Now, did I answer the core of your question, which had to do...
Well, I think she was asking you about some of the research around the exclusion laws and maybe
That they were really bad. They didn't actually kick too many people out, but I think they had the effect of discouraging black people to come in, because why would you set up a business or start a farm if you thought you could be kicked out at any time?
Does the main character, Damaris's character, ever come to terms and reconcile with her actual heritage, the fullness of it?
Well, you know what? I think I'm not going to answer that question. Just
that might be a cat out of the bag.
Yeah, cat out of the bag.
Cats out of the bag.
But that's obviously a central issue. And when you have people deceiving each other, deceiving themselves, by the end of the play, some of those things are going to be unmasked. Yeah, and see, we lived in Hawaii for 50 years before we came to Portland 4 years ago, and Hawaii is a state where dark-skinned people are considered beautiful, valued. The Hawaiians had royalty. And so come to Portland, which is predominantly white city, was very different for us.
Well, the stage reading of Deception by playwright Nancy Moss is running one weekend only, okay. January 28th, 29th, and 31st at 7:30 p.m., January 28th and 29th at 7:30 p.m., and January 31st at 2 p.m. at Lincoln Hall at PSU. And tickets are at pdx.edu/boxoffice/tickets. Or you can visit stageandstudio.org and get that complete link, or call 503-725-3307. But they are available through PSU's box office and also the Smith Memorial Student Union Broadway entrance. You can get info on fertilegroundpdx.org or stageandstudio.org. So in the time remaining, we have a few moments. I was just curious, from all three playwrights, how valuable is this experience to do the staged reading? I mean, I personally often think I enjoy stage readings a lot more than sometimes full production. So just, you know, I want to go around the table and just say, you know, how important is this opportunity to produce this as a staged reading? Bonnie, you want to talk about that?
In fact, Nancy and I were talking about this before we started. And, you know, this opportunity to know that rewriting is part of the process, you know, is completely invaluable. And being able to work informally, but yet be shooting for a production, to have some elements of production, but to know that this is workshoppy. And so it's a lovely way to kind of let your baby take first steps.
Right.
It's very valuable. And I just have to say, Fertile Ground, terrific.
Absolutely.
Fertile Ground is a terrific experience. I mean, Nicole, yay, and her team.
Nicole Vane.
Just really great.
They make it so easy.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about how important this has been?
Oh, absolutely. So I agree with what Bonnie was saying. I'm really intending to have this as an opportunity to get a lot of feedback from the audience to try to, you know, reshape it, and then next year bring it back as a full production. I have full intention of doing that, but I'd really love to kind of engage with the audience. This is the first time it's been read publicly, and so I'm looking forward to hearing what people have to say about it. And but the other thing is I'm meeting all of these amazing playwrights that I wouldn't necessarily have been able to associate with before or know about them and what they're doing. And there's such an opportunity to really see the breadth of talent that Portland has to offer. This is the first time I've had a play in Fertile Ground, although I've acted in it. I think this is such an amazing gift to anyone who's creative to try it out and see what sticks.
And for you, Nancy, you actually had a reading of this at...
last year, yeah.
But this is a whole nother version of the play, so... Yeah.
Actually, you know the answer to this, because Dime, when she read the script, she said to me, you know, this one scene doesn't work. And I said, hey, it's fine. And I looked at it and I went, oh my gosh, and I could see a way to make it better. And, you know, in other words, you think, or I think, oh, this is finished. I've done the best I can. And then you suddenly go, oh my gosh, this could be better. And
yes.
Hearing it in public, is sometimes you go, oh my gosh, how could I have written that line? Especially humor. How could I have thought that was funny? You know,
right.
Or they'll laugh at something that you thought was serious and they'll laugh. So it's a real exposure, and sometimes an affirmation, and sometimes a back to the drawing board moment. Yeah.
Well, I just wanted, sometimes I hear from white writers especially who are skittish about writing characters of color. And I want to ask you three, you know, recommendations for more playwrights, because I think it's sorely needed in American theater to write more women of color in their scripts. Do you want to give any recommendations about that to our listeners in the time remaining, Renee? Bonnie?
Recommendations of
Yeah, how to just go for it. You know, I hear from white writers, you know, it's, I don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to write a seriously, I have heard this, a character of color. I don't want to say anything wrong or do anything wrong, you know. So there's some ambivalence about that.
I'd really love to talk about that because, in fact, that's one of the themes of the piece.
Oh, okay.
The storytelling. Who gets to tell the story?
From Hazardous Beauty?
Yeah. Okay. And I think it's actually a question that begs so many more questions, you know. Is it that you, first of all, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid as a human being to have relationships with other human beings, and don't be afraid to reflect the human condition. Now, does that bring about some responsibility on your part? Absolutely. You know, there's a responsibility to be conscious, you know, to really understand, to educate yourself, you know. So there's a difference, you know, there's a distance between intention and impact. We need to know that. But I would love for people who don't think that white women should be telling these stories to come to the plays, participate in the conversation.
In the discussion.
In the discussion afterwards. Raise those questions. Raise that voice. We just need to keep talking to each other.
Yes, I agree with that. We definitely need to keep talking. And also being open to just having people read it for you. I mean, that's certainly what I knew I had to do. And my characters aren't necessarily even people of color, except that this is what's happening in the reading. So I'm looking, there was another play that I wrote about Lone Fir Cemetery, where I had to get someone who was Asian to read this particular part of it to see whether it resonated or not. So I recognize that I can write something, but it doesn't necessarily land the way that I'm thinking it does. So I'm always looking for other voices.
The other help is if you have roles for people of color, you have actors who are people
right.
of color,
Good
and
point.
They can give you feedback and say, I don't think he would say
exactly.
that.
And
that's,
exactly.
That can be really helpful.
Yeah. So it's a collaborative process, right?
Definitely.
This whole playwriting
yeah,
thing.
Absolutely.
You can find out more about all three plays at Fertile Ground PDX and at stageandstudio.org, and where I'm going to also have the show later today of this podcast, on podcast. S. Renee Mitchell, Nancy Moss, and Bonnie Ratner, thank you so much for joining me today in this lively conversation.
Thank you.
Have a great openings, all of you.
Thanks
That's
so
it
much.
For Stage and Studio. Thank you to engineer Janet Anderson. Podcast later today at stageandstudio.org and on iTunes, and you can like us on facebook.com/stage-the-letter-n-studio or tweet me @stage-the-letter-n-studio. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.